Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Face Up, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, property, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We the people must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our broken legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. It's time to face us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Face Us Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Hidden Truth Revealed channel, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is March 6, 2024. My name is Robin Austin, and I'm with my co-host.
Hello, everybody. We've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to go ahead and introduce Hillary Hoag as one of our co-hosts as well. Go ahead, Hillary.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks again for joining us on what is hopefully becoming more apparent to the American people at large that this is the worst situation of a person's civil liberties being taken away. It can happen to anyone. It's happened to us, and knowledge is power. So this radio show, thanks to our hosts and our guests, we are letting everyone know what can happen to an innocent American citizen. So another great lineup tonight, and thanks for having me.
You are very much welcome. We've got a great show. And I know, Hillary, you've had a lot of stuff going on out there in Florida, and we'll be posting them up on our show, our podcast, or website. But good stuff is happening. We're going to be having a website come back pretty soon. We've been working on a book.
It's in the works.
It's in the works. We got a book coming out probably sometime in April, hopefully, first of May, somewhere around there. But it's going to talk a lot about what's been going on in our courtrooms and everything. It's really starting to be a good book. So, well, we can't wait to get that on with that. We've got a really good radio show tonight. I mean, we're going to bring you some information. Oh, my gosh, this is so exciting. First of all, we welcome two retired attorneys, Leslie Rodriguez and Phil Ross. I know that you've heard about them before. They've been on our show quite a few times. So,
not together, however.
Yeah, I think they work together. Well, I don't know. There's been a couple of times I've had so many different attorneys
on. We certainly wanted to make this happen.
Yeah.
I didn't know if this, I thought this was the first time. Maybe I'm mistaken.
Okay, so in the world of Face Us, Phil Ross and Leslie are legends. Anyone following our work is likely familiar with these two maverick retired attorneys. We call them mavericks because they've been wonderful. And how the legal profession put the squeeze on to push them out of the way because they were so effective at assisting clients. Two attorneys face sanctions and they are forced into retirement. From what I heard, it was the same month. From what I heard, I'm going to let them come on and talk about this. And they're also going to be coming together to discuss exciting developments concerning their collaboration working together. So I think this is really exciting news. And we're going to go ahead and bring on Leslie Federico, and then we're going to bring on Phil. Let me bring her on and let Leslie speak for a few minutes. I'm going to bring Phil on. Leslie, go ahead.
Hey, well, thank you guys for having me.
Hey,
Hillary. Thank you guys for having me. And introducing me to Phil as well. And we learned, you know, our stories were very parallel. We were both two attorneys that went back later in life to become lawyers. And I do think that's significant because we went back, you know, with a lot of experience and a purpose, you know, with what we were doing. And we both fought really hard for our clients. And it was ironic. We actually retired in the same month last year and had very similar stories. So it was very nice to meet somebody. We've been speaking over the last week, you know, being able to think of ideas of things we could do together. So thank you guys for introducing us.
Right, yes. We thought that was really good. And go ahead. I'm going to bring Phil on as well and let him talk a little bit first, and then we're going to let you two just talk away. So, Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Luann. Well,
You're
I started
welcome.
Practicing law back in about 1989 when I was 39 years old. And I quickly discovered that my political orientation, I guess you'd call it, was antagonistic to the people that I was confronting in the legal system as a new attorney working solo practice for myself. And after 34 years of practice, last year in March, I decided to retire under pressure from my opponents who had gotten the ear of the Texas Bar Association that decided to pursue five different grievances that were filed by legal opponents that I had had during the past 10 years. And those included the infamous Tanya Barina, who is the guardian of my former client, Charlie Thrash. And we were all featured on the Netflix documentary that was part of their Dirty Money Series 2 called Guardianship, Inc. in 2020. After the guardianship program was published for about 6 months, it was taken off the air. And subsequently, Tanya Barina sued me and Netflix and others for $1 million in defamation damages.
Oh.
And she also filed a grievance against me that the Texas Bar Association was pursuing. And I quickly discovered, actually over a period of about 3 or 4 years that these grievance actions were pending, that the Texas Bar Association and the legal system do not play fairly and justly when they decide that they're going to discipline an attorney. And so I ultimately decided that my law practice had been somewhat frustrating, although I had lots of opportunities that I was able to help people either avoid unnecessary guardianships or restore their capacity and get them out of a guardianship. But it was extremely frustrating to try and work from inside the system. And I didn't realize it, but I really needed to change my career. I needed to retire from the practice of law, retire my law license, and start working from the outside in more of an instructive or teaching capacity as a way to inform and to educate the potentially millions of Americans who are forced or choose to represent themselves pro se.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that overcoming the gap between the professional attorneys and the amateur litigants, the pro se litigants, through education is going to be a key to changing the whole functionality of the legal system in America. It's going to take time, but I think Leslie and I are going to focus on doing our part to start educating the American public about how to make the legal system work if you have to be in court and how to avoid being in court if you have an opportunity to stay out of court. And that's that's what we've been starting to talk about since Luann introduced us last week.
that's amazing.
It's really exciting.
I love doing this kind of work, you know.
It's really exciting. Yeah. We've known for our listeners who may be new or may not have been able to tune in every week. Just to sort of give you a little background and history. When we learned of Leslie and Phil, each respectively, we didn't know them together. We knew them separately, and we began to hear about their stories when they were in the midst of pretty much. I think we first became acquainted with them when they were in the midst of being kind of assaulted. I mean,
yeah.
not physically, but certainly psychologically by their peers. And when we began to explore the, you know, to tell the story, to begin to understand what their situation was and realize that this was a case of what we had seen before, which was attorneys being attacked by attorneys for no better reason than that they were effective, that they were working to help the people who hired them to help them.
Right.
And that they were being effective, that they were actually causing the some of these people that are that we look at and we go, well, that person is doing predatory things, because we feel that when you know, that oftentimes attorneys use the situation that they find themselves in to, in a way that is not helpful to their clients, and in fact harms them rather than helps them.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are two that we had heard about from various people that said, no, they really helped me. I'm really grateful to these attorneys because they're doing what's right. And to us, being in the business, you know, that means it's not that it's really a business. We don't do this for money, but being in the business of holding accountable those that are misusing authority in the court, it was kind of a novel thing to hear people say, "This is a good attorney who is actually helping."
Right. We've had several good attorneys on, though.
We have.
But it's
still,
no, we've had quite a few.
No, we've had quite a few, and mm-hmm. I'm not saying they don't. I'm saying, you know, they do exist, but they're but oftentimes it, when people are calling you every week to talk about the horrible things that various attorneys are doing to them, it is really refreshing when somebody calls to say, oh, this attorney's helping a lot and is doing good things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we first became acquainted with both Bill Ross and Leslie Federigo.
Uh-huh.
And then we watched and listened and learned and followed the story as they were persecuted and prosecuted and dragged through their names were dragged through the mud by people that wanted to destroy them because they were effective and helpful attorneys. And
Robin, really quick, if I could just say, but to begin with, they were good stories. Phil, Dirty Money, you know, the Thrash case, unveiling the corruption, Leslie, Doug Keegan, Jan Garwood, Russell Sage Myers, Deesa Sachs, you know, all of these cases, they were doing such good work. It was kumbaya across the country. And then they found out about it. And that's when the knives, you know, so to speak, came out. So they were doing phenomenally, and then they were cut down short. So thank you for letting me interrupt.
No, thank you for that, because you're absolutely right, and that is the way that the story needs to be told,
isn't it,
because it's what happened.
So isn't it true, Phil and Leslie, that for you to go in front of a judge, they're supposed to be fair and impartial. So if you're in there working with your clients and you're doing really good, I mean, how can they sit there and say, you know, that you're not doing your job, you have mental issues, or whatever they come up with? How does the Supreme Court and how does the American Bar Association let them get away with it? Is it just because attorneys are working with attorneys, or what do you think about that?
If I could add to that for sure. I was attacked, and I think, and Phil can speak for himself on his end, but I got a slew of complaints after the ABC News segment came out with the Keegan case. 2 days later, the attorney for The Guardian filed a bar complaint, and then The Guardian filed a bar complaint. Then in another county, another slew of opposing, you know, attorneys in my cases and Guardians started filing bar complaints. And then I later found out, at least in Florida, the head of ACAP, which is the initial screener of bar complaints, they decide whether to drop it or whether to pursue it. It's kind of like a prosecutor, you know, who decides whether or not they want to pursue, you know, charges. The director of ACAP was a former elder law guardianship attorney. So in my case, it wasn't the judge. Like, the judges actually, I'm not going to say it. I mean, I did have some issues with some judges, but the judges, you know, they, I restored rights, and I, the Keegan judge was great, you know, in the Keegan case, you know, she, we prevailed in that. I never got a complaint or anything like that, you know, from that judge or anything. But my attack came from those that were fighting hard to keep people in guardianships, those attorneys and those guardians. And then, you know, then it, what ended up happening is then I fired a paralegal who, you know, wasn't doing her job, and she got connected with the guardianship attorneys in retaliation against me, stole my client's database, started making phone calls. Elliot, you know, informed me when he recorded one of them, and we got to listen to her just how far she went. So then it created doubt in the in people's eyes, you know, because they're hearing all these bad things about me. So, you know, those that knew me, you know, they stuck by me, and they understood what was happening. But then there's some people I hardly knew, and I just picked up a case, you know. So, it, I mean, it destroyed my law firm overnight. But that's how, in my case, that's how it was able to start.
I mean, if that's not a red flag for people in guardianship, that these attorneys want these people to stay in a guardianship because it's, I'm going to say, in my opinion, is not profitable enough. So what do you think about that? Is that what you're thinking as well, just not profitable?
Are you asking me, Luann?
You can answer that.
Yeah,
can answer
not,
that.
The Florida statute allows, it mandates that the attorney for the guardian collects their fee invoices from the ward's estate. And then, of course, the guardian gets to bill the ward's estate. Then, of course, the attorney for the ward gets to bill their estate. So naturally, when I restore the rights to a ward, all those people lose their monthly income flow.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot of green that gets tucked back into the wallet of the person that you just rescued from a bunch of people that were taking a lot of money.
What would you do? As an attorney, I'm going to ask both of you, what's the best solution on not paying them out of a ward's estate? What else could be done? I mean, because obviously that's the incentive. Leslie, I'll go with you first.
Oh, good. Me. Well, I mean, it's, you know, I think you got to, well, it's a hard thing to say. I mean, I don't believe in guardianships hardly at all, except for extreme situations. So, you know, my whole thing is stay away from the attorneys with your estate planning and stay away from the court. So you don't need a guardianship. That's my viewpoint. But, you know, there's got to be another way, you know, just like, I guess it could be, but then the money would have to come from the state. And then you also hear these stories with public guardians that they're no better than the private. But, you know, just like you have court-appointed attorneys, you know, in, say, a criminal defense case, you know, maybe the money comes, you know, where you get a flat rate, you know, like you're working for the state, you know, like you got, you know, how they structure it in criminal court with the defense attorney.
Right.
I just think it's an incentive. You know, it's an incentive. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And you know something, Leslie? Someone, I don't know who the person is, but obviously, you know, not feeling it for guardianship. She posted in Osceola and Orange County that they're looking for a court monitor. And they are, you get no sick time, you get no paid vacation, you do not get any compensation if you work a certain amount of years, and the top pay that you will receive before taxes, and this is in the guardianship area, you will be going over the accountings to see if the filings are on time, if the guardians are doing anything nefarious, and you will be paid $20 an hour. That's really not much.
Right.
So these people can be bought off very easily. Not that they are, but I agree with you wholeheartedly that there should be an hourly pay fee, right, for the guardians. And, you know, maybe it can go higher, but or it can be a salary. But as of now, you take the 40-hour class, and there are guardians that are making $120 an hour. It's not.
Wow.
So something has to make it less attractive to the average criminal who gets involved in guardianship.
Exactly. I agree. You know, go ahead, Phil.
Another perspective on this issue is that the legislature has made it very easy in the state of Texas and probably every other state for judges to abuse their discretion and for lawyers to get involved in getting appointed as guardians ad litem or attorneys ad litem or as temporary guardians. And what happens in Texas is that very quickly at the beginning normally of a guardianship proceeding, which can be initiated by any person who has any evidence that the proposed ward lacks capacity to take care of themselves or is a danger to themselves or someone else. And from the very beginning, the court seems to be oriented to appoint a temporary guardian. And from that instance, the guardian takes control of the ward's estate. And once the guardian takes control of the ward's estate, which can happen on the very first hearing in a guardianship proceeding in Texas, the person that was functioning on their own without interference all of a sudden has no access to any money and normally is not allowed to hire their own attorney of their choice, but they're stuck with the court-appointed attorneys, both a guardian ad litem, an attorney ad litem, and a temporary guardian. And once the process starts, it's extremely difficult to turn it around and to free that person from the guardianship, even when there are less restrictive alternatives in place. And in Texas, there's a Bill of Rights for wards that gets a lot of lip service from judges and from lawyers, but in effect is dysfunctional because less restrictive alternatives to guardianship are generally not given serious consideration. And it's been my experience, particularly in the guardianship proceeding involving my former client, Charlie Thrash, that Charlie was not allowed any voice in his proceeding. He was not allowed to defend himself. He was not allowed to hire an attorney of his choice. And once he was appointed permanent guardians, there was no way to help him get out of the guardianship, even though the estate's code procedures had not been followed in his case. He was put into a permanent guardianship without an evidentiary hearing, which is required under the Texas Estates Code, and without evidence of incapacity within the preceding 6 months. The evidence that was used against him to prove his incapacity was over a year old, and the psychiatrist and psychologist were not even required to testify in court. The lawyers just simply let the guardians introduce the reports that were a year old into evidence without objection. The attorneys for the parties waived their jury demands, so there was no opportunity to convince a jury that Charlie Thrash had capacity. And then once I got involved, after Charlie had already been appointed a guardian, I did everything that I could think of for about 3 months trying to get him out of the guardianship. And my payback was a sanctions order for me to pay the guardian's attorney's fees, which were over $300,000 that the guardian had incurred fighting everything I was trying to do to try and help Charlie get out of the guardianship. The only saving grace was that Netflix got interested in the guardianship proceeding at an early stage and published a documentary which actually told the true story about the Charlie Thrash guardianship. And Netflix got sued for doing that, and that sort of payback for doing a good job. They're being sued along with myself and everybody else that participated in the documentary, mm-hmm. were over $1 million in damages. And Netflix has zealously defended their position, but it looks like the case is probably headed towards trial later this year.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Go ahead, Hillary.
So what? I'm sorry for cutting you off. So what happened to the $300,000 that you were told to pay for the Guardian fees? Did you have to? Is it still going on in court, or was it a final judgment?
It was a final order, and I appealed it all the way to the Texas Supreme Court, and I was not able to get it reversed. But I had planned ahead. I anticipated that the kind of legal work I was doing was pretty risky, starting about 15 years ago. So I decided to try and make myself judgment-proof because I did not carry liability insurance for the reason that I did not want to have an insurance company have the power to appoint a lawyer to represent me if I got sued for malpractice. And so I decided to put my property into a trust so that it was not part of my estate, and it would be very difficult for somebody to collect a judgment from me if I ever incurred a judgment like the $300,000 sanctions order.
Wow, that's
so because I was, there was never any effort to collect that $300,000, and that made me think that the real purpose was not to put $300,000 back into Charlie's estate, but to just sideline me as Charlie's attorney. And there, in my opinion, there was collusion between the judge and the attorneys for the Guardians. And they were against Charlie, and they were against anybody who was trying to help him. And the $300,000 sanctions order, which was accompanied by a temporary order that neither myself nor Laura Martinez nor Brittany Martinez were allowed to have any contact with Charlie Thrash, who was being held incognito under the control of his permanent guardian of his person, Mary Werner, a professional guardian, and Tanya Barina, his guardian of his estate.
Right. You know, and I have just such a hard time just thinking about how all these husbands, wives, girlfriends, whatever, you know, I hear about these stories every single day, how they just, their loved one is just completely scooped out of their life, and they fight like hell to get him back for years and years and years. It's just mind-boggling to know that this could actually happen. You know, I've had non-stop complaints, husbands, wives, girlfriends, and that. How often does that happen? Is it quite a bit? I'll talk to Phil.
Well, Leslie and I have decided to take the long-range viewpoint of how to cure this problem, and it's going to focus on educating people and overcoming the profound ignorance of the majority of the American population how to defend yourself in the legal system and how to avoid even getting involved in the legal system in the first place. Because
right.
The legal system is a very dangerous place, even for people that are trained. But when you get an amateur having to compete with a professional attorney, there's no fairness or justice that results from that conflict, because we have a adversarial system of justice in the United States. Attorneys have 3 years minimum law school education, and then they have continuing education, and they have experience, and they also have influence and connections, compared to the amateur person who probably learned nothing about the legal system in high school or college, or even in on-the-job training in life. And what the challenge that Leslie and I are planning to confront is how to begin to educate the American public to be able to avoid legal conflicts as a primary objection, and then how to defend yourself by giving them the tools that they need to compete with lawyers and judges in the interest of fairness and justice.
Just phenomenal. I think it's the first of its kind. I've never heard of anything like this being done before. And, you know, times are tough as it is for people financially, and just throw in something like, you know, a contested guardianship or something like that. Most people, the average person, I would think, does not have an extra $100,000 to spend on an attorney to fight the guardianship. So we're grateful to you and Leslie for even starting this. I just think it's phenomenal. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I think the average person not only doesn't have a legal education, but because the legal system now has become riddled, it's like there's a rock that's going in. You know, if it were food, it's like it's gradually going rotten, and there's some good in it, but there's a lot of rottenness in it. And the average person is really, it's like walking through a desert where you might hit quicksand anywhere, because you never know when you go to hire an attorney what courtroom you might wind up in and what the effects of that might be, because there can be hazards there that an attorney really cannot surmount. You never know what the situation is of the attorney that you're hiring. Many attorneys, I would imagine, go through legal, you know, go through the process of getting their legal education and go into the field with good intentions, and then discover that they're unable to function without joining with the corrupted group of attorneys that operate in their local law environment. Mm-hmm. And then there's others that from the beginning kind of know, this is fine. I can get power over people, and that's what I'm really after. And I can use that power I can exploit that and enrich myself at the expense of others. And I think, you know, that so the average person doesn't only face the lack of legal education, but they're entering into an arena that is kind of a war zone with a lot of landmines and a lot of quicksand and a lot of trouble that they may encounter just by the virtue of the fact that the legal system has so much corruption involved in it. I mean, would our guest, Leslie, if you would, you know, give an opinion, and Phil, if you want to give an opinion, am I hitting the mark here, or?
I agree with you 100%. It's almost like it's a gamble. It's a gamble even going to an attorney for estate planning, because what I've learned is these people that are corrupt with these agendas, they spread themselves out throughout the country. It's like you don't know, you know, when you're going to speak to an attorney who they're connected with, what they're, you know, involved in. The general public's not going to know that. And so it's very dangerous. That's why I told you guys, I think last week, my husband and I have been thinking of all these ways to deal with our estate as we get older, and how we want to do this to ensure that there's no possibility of this happening to us. And I'll tell you right now, we're going to keep it, you know, without attorneys involved. You can go into Google, like I said last week, and you can read power of attorney templates and everything. It's just a danger zone. You just don't know who you're going to get involved with. And then, of course, I tend to believe that these attorneys that are a part of this racket, they, you know, every judge was an attorney first. And where do you think judges come from? They were attorneys. And who's to say, you know, because I know even in my husband does personal injury, even in personal injury, you know, they were advocating for certain people that were running for judge who supported, you know, their political stance with Pip and everything else that he was dealing with. They came out, you know, to my husband to support their campaign. I mean, who's to say that these groups are not getting together behind closed doors going, okay, who's going to, we need a judge that shares our mindset, you know, in each county. We are, and listen, if you run for judge, we'll get you support from the other elder law attorneys. You know, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and it's absolute best to stay away from it at all costs. I mean, you don't have to have a guardianship. There's so many other things you can do. You don't have to go to an attorney to draw up certain papers. You know, there's enough out there. You can teach yourself a lot of it. And that's, you know, what Phil and I are trying to do, because here's what happens. You know, the time clock's kicking. When you get hit in, when you get involved in a case like this, it's like a snowball that just keeps falling down the mountain. You don't necessarily have the time at that point always to educate yourself. Cause you're just dodging bullets right then. You know, you're in panic mode. What do I do next? You know, that's why, you know, I would suggest, ready, even if you're not involved, but there could be a possibility in the future you could be involved. Get educated now, because you're not going to, when it hits you, there's not all this time to just sit around and educate yourself. I mean, yes, you need to educate yourself, you know, that, I mean, you're going to have to make time to do so, but you know, if you can do it ahead of time and just educate yourself in how to avoid, like Phil is saying, we want to work on a program on how to avoid the courts to get your objective goal. And then also, once you're involved, how do you maneuver? How do you handle yourself in a case like this? But, you know, just because people aren't affected now doesn't mean you shouldn't educate yourself. You know, I think everybody needs to for the reasons that we've been speaking about tonight.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing you both could talk about is definitely prevention. I mean, I think that's one of the most important things. I mean, I personally was blown away that we had a family trust, and it didn't matter anything until the very end after my mother died, and the trustee says, well, we have to go according to your trust. And I thought, well, when's the first, that's the first time you've ever mentioned the word trust. But I'm just saying that we thought we did. All the educating we did, my dad was on top of the world. He knew what he was doing. He did everything right. He dotted his I's. I talk about this in the book. He did it all, and it still failed. So that's really important to let people understand.
Well, I think that's the wrong terminology, if I can interject. I don't think your dad failed. I think that basically he was betrayed by the very system that we're talking about, mm-hmm. because your father he was a smart man, and he hired smart attorneys, and he knew how to read legal paperwork, and mm-hmm. and he could have been an attorney, but he didn't want to be an attorney because he said, well, attorneys are held to a certain standard of ethics, and mm-hmm. I don't want to be held to a standard uh-huh. of ethics. I want to be able to do what I want to do.
Okay.
And
I'm going to try to bring Elliot on. Can we
okay,
do that?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
We're going to go ahead and bring Elliot on. He's been wanting to come on for a little bit. Elliot, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hi,
Elliot,
Mr.
Everyone. Thanks for having me back. I love your show. And I love Leslie. Who's
hey, Elliot.
Leslie was yeah. my children's attorney. And I'm just going to give a quick piece here to say that I was talking to a friend today, and I said, imagine this. This is what I've been going through. I have to do a brain surgery. Elliot, I've never been to medical school. I've never done brain surgery. And I'm against a brain surgeon. And we're going to have two patients with tumors in their brain. And who do you think is going to save their patient? Elliot, who has no training, no 4 years of medical school, 8 years, whatever the hell, or a surgeon who's been trained in the art? People do you think I'll say versus him? Seriously,
yeah.
I'm not kidding. That's what going yeah. in pro se is. And I really love what Leslie is doing with Phil to try to educate people. But I'm educated, and I've been fighting 25 years pro se. And when I realized that pro se people get no help whatsoever, I hired disbarred attorneys who put in perfect pleadings. Then I went and I hired paralegals off websites in India who did perfect pleadings. But it didn't matter, because when you get to court, if you're not a brain surgeon, nobody's listening to you on how to do brain surgery. And that's where you're going to end up here. This is all about. Here's what really needs to happen. The sheriff and the FBI need to get off their fucking asses, excuse my French, and get back to doing the long, strong arm of the law and arrest these judges and stop this shit. Because without that, I don't care what beautiful legislations you guys all work on, and I have been through all of this for every day with every one of you, and I've been through all the help pro se people try to, it ain't ever going to happen. What we need is sheriffs. And I saw some article that Hillary Hogue today posted where sheriffs look like they're coming in, because the only way to stop this isn't you going into a court and trying to be F. Lee Bailey, because that ain't ever going to happen. I don't care who you are. Until you go to law school, you are not a lawyer. You are not a brain surgeon till you go through medical school. So stop and take a look at what we all need to do.
Right.
Start marching on the sheriff, on the FBI, and say enough is enough. There's enough publicity out here. They are killing little old ladies, raping them, and stealing their estates. Who are you people? You're ignoring this? It's in the news everywhere. Wake the F up and do your job, or else you're a part of this. And if that's
right,
the case, folks, we need to do a lot more, and we need to be marching on the Attorney General's office, and we need to be focusing all our efforts on getting judges arrested. Now, everybody knows that I've been purporting this for as long as you've been involved in your affairs, to go to the sheriff, file complaints, go to PD, go to FBI, put in, well, you know what? That's the real, once we grab one judge who's murdered a few of these little old ladies and allowed all this shit while they look like they're, oh, innocent bystanders, and grab them and put them in handcuffs with the guardian, with the lawyers, and throw them in, I will tell you this, on that day, all of this ends, because these attorneys are a bunch of coward bastards who rape and rob little old ladies for their money. They do a lot worse, but murdering people is part of it. When you grab one judge and arrest him and prosecute him and try, hey, here in Florida, I got Martin Cohen, I got a whole lot of listed judges and lawyers who need to be prosecuted for murdering people, murdering little old ladies and men, yes, for their estates while they're robbing them. Once you arrest one, the rest will flee like rats on a sinking ship. You know the last thing you see from space when you look at a sinking ship? Rats, asses. Okay? And that's what will happen. They will scatter. And until we direct our efforts as pro se people and whatever to not changing legislation, because they ain't following the current legislation, because I know current legislation does not allow government to grab little old ladies, kill them, and steal their estates or their children and put them in these horror stories. So, you know, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, but you know what, Elliot? I do believe that what Leslie and Phil are doing is also very educational, just so that people know what could happen when you end up in court.
It's ineffective. It's educational, but ineffective.
Well,
and until those people become licensed, licensed bar members, and Leslie can tell you, he is a licensed, was a licensed bar member. So until you're even at that level, you don't stand a chance. And if you get to the level where you, Leslie was, where she actually went to school and did law and believed in all that nonsense, you don't stand a chance. You could go in pro se with the best knowledge, but if you didn't graduate law school, they don't even listen to you. They don't care. They ignore
all
the rules.
Let's talk to Leslie right now and see what he has to say about that. Go ahead.
What I was just going to say is, so in my case, when I was going through everything, I did make criminal complaints, okay, because I was getting death threats to my children. And my case was investigated, and it was sent to the district attorney general's office. I did speak with the main director, the main person in charge. He was an attorney. He was a prosecutor. And he assured me he was going to go for the jugular on this one until he found out that one of the people involved was an attorney that he used to work with. And his whole – everything changed at that point. And he – here's the problem. There's a thing called what's called prosecutorial discretion. That's the law. And you can report it. It can get sent just like it did with me. But at the end of the day, they have a law that they can pick and choose who they want to prosecute. And he told me, I'm sorry, but I can't prosecute this case because of this attorney that's involved, you know, with the other people. He's like, I could have prosecuted them, but now that I know this attorney is one of the people, you know, that's involved, I'm choosing not to do this. And another problem is when you get arrested, there's processes. Everything has a legal process, everything from an arrest to, you know, going into trial, to jury trials in criminal court. Everything is a process. And, you know, it's not like you can just go in there and sweep up a judge and put him in jail. It's not that easy. You have to have, you know, probable cause. You have to have evidence. You have to be able to legally, you know, navigate from even a criminal stance. You have to legally navigate. And so the thing is you can't get away from the legal navigation regardless of what you do. You could send it to the FBI. The FBI could, you know, find something, and if they want to press charges, guess what? Now you're into a criminal legal battle. It's still a legal battle. And that's the thing. It doesn't work just like, okay, let's report and this person's just going to get handcuffed and thrown into jail. It's not how it works. There's a process to everything, and it involves a legal process. So, you know, is this stuff happening? Absolutely. It's like, you know, when you go, when you have criminal cases and you have, you know that this person's a criminal, right? And then the prosecution and the police are like, crap, we can get him on this less charge, but we don't have the evidence to get him on this charge, you know, when they fully know that this person murdered somebody, right? But unless there's evidence and unless it's done procedurally correct, for instance, you know, if a police comes into your house, raids your house with no warrant, no probable cause, and they grab incriminating evidence, and they can prove that you did this with this incriminating evidence, you can turn around and say, well, you didn't fruit of the poisonous tree, you didn't go about it correctly, right? You make a statement before your Miranda rights were stated. It's a legal game, any way you go, FBI, criminal, jail, it's still legal process. So the point is that, you know, without having a foundation to understanding this, you don't even know, you could get in so deep and not realize that you could have done X, Y, and Z to stop it from even starting. And that's the thing. I just dealt with child services in the fall 3 times. I extinguished it immediately because of my legal knowledge. Now, if I wasn't a lawyer, I can't tell you what would have happened to me. Okay, so my point being is that it can only help somebody. Ellie, I believe you're correct when it comes to pro se litigants not being as respected as an attorney, you know, with the judges. That's why I always say if you're going pro se, you need to have all your legal arguments written impeccably and filed, because the only other place you can go after that in that case would be to an appellate court. And if they didn't respect you, but at least you have it on the record, written on the record, you can bring it forth in an appeal. But if you don't have the legal knowledge, you're not even going to preserve your case enough to have, you know, possible merit in an appeal. So it can't ever hurt you to have the knowledge. And I can tell you, you know, I'm not saying if you have the knowledge, you're going to win because of politics, corruption. I'm not saying that at all. But heck, if I'm going anywhere, I'd rather have a foundation than nothing at all. But my advice at the end of the day is stay the hell away. Stay the hell away from the legal system at all costs. And that's where education comes in too. You know, what can you do outside of the court without having, you know, because a lot of Americans are under this impression that they have to seek a guardianship should, you know, one of their family members, you know, deteriorate in any capacity. No, you don't have to. You know what I mean? These are these are things that Americans need to be educated in. I think prevention is huge. But I'll stop there. But I just wanted to, you know, give you my thoughts on that.
That's perfect. Yes, and we're gonna and Elliot, we're gonna thanks coming on. Go ahead, Elliot.
Okay.
Few more minutes.
I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, I love you, and I gotta tell you that education, I believe in for these people, and to know their rights is important, and all of that. And that even if you pursue criminal, you still need to preserve civil rights that you have, that they're abusing. But going to the court and asking the people you're accusing of being a criminal RICO organization to arrest themselves is ridiculous. And I have watched 20 years of people with great evidence going into the courts, and not a single thing is being listened to because you're pleading, committing the crime against you. And Leslie can tell all of you, she represented three of my children. Two of them were put in a guardianship for minors, where there's no competency hearing required or anything, and they were adults. So imagine you're an adult and you're put into a guardianship for minors where nothing's required, and then the guardian comes in and robs and rapes you of every dollar that was given to you by your grandparents or whatever. That's actual real shit that Leslie dealt with in my case. And by the way, I believe Leslie was partially hounded because she represented my kids. And the attorney before her was an 80-year-old Harvard cum laude, Arthur Moorberger of Miami, who got barred after he represented my kids for the craziest disbarment I've ever seen next to Leslie's, who then represented my kids after Arthur. Because we are up against a criminal organization. I don't know if anybody watched The Godfather, but it happened the mobsters took over the legal system. How they did it is a very intricate. Anybody wants to talk about it? I know exactly who the people were who were involved in it, how they got there. These are murderous Nazi type people. And they will put your mother in an oven and will not give a shit. And I don't know if all of you realize that or not, but the only way to stop it is we either get the strong arm of law on our side or we're dead. This country is over.
Elliot, we're going to go ahead and move on now. I've got like five or six callers that want to come in.
Go do it.
But thank you for calling into the show. We appreciate it.
Love, love.
Okay, we've got one of our radio show hosts calling in right now, Marcy. Hello, Marcy.
Hi, everybody. Hello,
hi.
America. In America, it's brava. We're mad. We're mad that this is going on, and we are brave because we're standing up against people that are just not godly. And I wanted to ask Leslie, and thanks for coming on again. Did you do you think, being an attorney as you are in probate, that the articles 3 and 6 in amendments 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 14, et cetera, can that be applied to guardianship? Doesn't that protect us?
I would have to review that, everything, because that, I mean, that's a lot of information as far as I don't know. Like, when I practice law, there's some things I have memorized, but most of it I have to go in into system to review the wording.
I would really love to get your feedback on that, because it also allows I believe, according to this, the judges are supposed to facilitate jury trials, even in probate. But because I'm not an attorney, but I've been talking to somebody who knows, he studies the Constitution of the United States, he texts to see if I would ask you this, what would your feedback be on that, if this can be applied to guardianship as well.
I don't know, Phil, do you have it? I don't have it. Before I could answer that question, I would need
I'm going to email it to you. And so perhaps next time you come to the show, you can give us a feedback on that.
Absolutely.
If you look at Article 3 of the United States Constitution regarding judicial branch, the only power given to judges is to facilitate the jury trial in all cases. It is the non-discretionary, there goes my Spanish accent, discretionary, as those sections above, that I just mentioned above, that makes it clear. So there might be something there that you can research on that to make sure that what he's saying is true.
Okay. Right. Yeah, email me and I'll look and send you back
information. I will email you on that.
Yeah, but that's something to talk about on one of your podcasts as well. All that information is really good.
Yeah. He's pretty good, this guy. He's always sexy.
Let's talk. Go ahead.
Thank you for coming in.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, everything that Elliot was talking about is true. Like, you know, how safe is it to live in the United States now, because these people that have wronged our parents, our loved ones, and they ended up being injured, how many more injuries are there going to have to be before they face the fact that these are crimes committed against humanity? You know, I saw that there was a law. Somebody saw somebody being abused, and they didn't do anything about it. They're just as guilty. But evidently, it's not in some courts, you know. So it's pretty scary to live here and to have a governor that is so family-oriented and who's been televised and interviewed by Adam Walter, that he sees it, but nothing gets done. And I just don't understand why not, when we have the laws
it's
of
very
the United States that protect us.
Right. Well, it's a very
profitable
scheme, and it's kind of like guns, you know, they want to ban them, but then they don't, and they're a profitable organization. It's the same kind of thing in my perspective, you know? So you got a good point there. We're going to go ahead and take in some callers right now. The number you do that is 845-241-9962, and you press a 1. 845-241-9962,
And if you need to talk to either one of these retired attorneys, just go ahead and give us a call here and we'll bring you on. It's live now, and all of our podcasts are taped, recorded for your convenience. You can get them anytime you didn't Truth Build on Blog Talk Radio. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring on some more, Marcy and Hillary. An 817 number. Let's bring on an 817 number. Welcome. 817.
Hi, this is Letty from Texas. I'm just supporting both attorneys, Phil and Leslie. I think they are doing an awesome job. Amazing. Thank you, Phil, for doing this, and Leslie, and, of course, Luann and Robin and Hillary and, of course, Marcy. I appreciate the effort and education of the public.
I can tell you
that I have two attorneys that were involved in my son's case, and my son was seriously injured. I've had some blessings, like Leslie was talking about when you filed the complaint and the retaliation. Fortunately for me, in my case, APS stalled, Inspector General kicked back the case, Senator got my evidence. Right now, I have been threatened by the garden. And so one of the criminal investigations is on a suspense status. I was told I would never see my son again if I filed a complaint. Unfortunately, it wasn't me. It was one of the legislators, two of the legislators that did file the complaint. So I'm letting you know that at this time, right now, we have to ask ourselves when we do file complaints, and I know Leslie mentioned she had done so. We don't get that relief. I mean, they offered him victim services twice. I did a good deed. I was able to, shut down and assist with one of the day habs. And we're talking about very cruel, just tragic stories, raping them. I mean, if I went into it, it would just really harm you. So we'll leave it at to where they were being abused and kept in a warehouse during the day for over 7 hours. Now, my concern is that they were shut down. I gave the evidence, and I was suspended for it, for the action that the legislators took, okay? I know for a fact right now that I probably have had one filing, okay, and that was a motion to compel, meaning somebody made a comment, but I wasn't involved, but they flip it around and twist it around. So I know also when the attorney that I hired, he had no problems going after that, but when it came to this guardian, oh, boy, who had a contract by the county, everything changed. Okay, and he said in an email, I will never have a career again if I go after them.
Right.
So,
And I think it's happening a lot. I mean, like our two former attorneys, the retired attorneys, they're in the same position. And I remember when we first started doing these radio shows, and attorneys started coming on and saying, wow, they're coming after us as well. And I'm like, wow, that can't be happening. But it is happening. Did you have a question or a comment
I do have a comment for the actual part on the sanctions for Phil. Phil, I know you were sanctioned, and I know you mentioned, I listened very carefully, you felt that it was part of the act to stop you. Do you feel once Netflix possibly will litigate, that will open the door for you to go in and assist the Thrash case?
Yes. One thought that is going through my mind is that everybody, no matter how educated you are or how powerful you are or how influential you are, is potentially vulnerable. And when there's a concerted effort to come after an individual and they don't really have a community supporting them, they can be vulnerable. And all it takes is collusion between people that have bad intent. And are not scrupulous, and that can be lawyers and judges or individuals. And the sanctions order against me would have been effective if I had been more vulnerable. But because I decided a long time ago that I do not want to be a victim, I think most people, at least in this country, have a philosophy that they don't want to be a victim of injustice. And I discovered when I started law school 40 years ago that I had a very unusual motivation for going to law school, and basically it was because I did not want to be a victim. I wanted to have the same training that lawyers had, because I knew that in business I would be having to deal with lawyers, and I wanted to know what they knew, and I did not want anybody to be able to take unfair advantage of me. But even with a legal education and with experience and training, I was still vulnerable when a group of lawyers and judges teamed up against me. And that also included the Texas Bar Association Disciplinary Committee. And I had to deal with that on my own, but I feel like the way that things evolved, that it was actually a benefit to me, because being confronted with pressure to stop practicing law opened up opportunities where I could be more effective in my goal to help other people avoid being victims themselves, or people that they care about being victims. There's always going to be victims. That's not something that we can stop. But it doesn't have to be you, and it doesn't have to be the people that you care about and want to protect. And what you need is the education to understand your rights, and also the tools you need to deal with whatever situation as best you can that might confront you. The Netflix documentary is a tremendous educational tool and political tool that can inform people about the dangers of guardianship abuse. And however that process, the legal process about the documentary and the defamation case against Netflix and myself evolves, it's going to have a lot of publicity, and it's going to have an educational effect for a large number of people whose eyes are going to be opened about the real dangers to personal liberty that Texans and other Americans face when confronted with guardianship abuse. And people with knowledge and motivation will be inclined to take political action to influence other people to stop the abuse. But it's got to start with an educational process. And political documentaries like the guardianship episode of the Dirty Money series on Netflix 3 years ago was a beginning. And it's going to have a continuation, and it's going to affect me personally and the people that I care about personally, because we're directly involved and we're going to be on the winning side. And that's going to have a potential effect to promote more exposure of the corruption and the abuse that we need to stop.
Right. Right. You know, I feel just as the effect of people getting basically stomped down when they do the right thing can have a chilling effect on the people who are trying to do the right thing themselves, but may not feel that they're empowered or strong enough. So it is when things develop in such a way that those who are doing what is right are vindicated through a legal process, that's empowering for every one of us who wants to speak truth to power and who is speaking truth to power, because it's frightening in any case to stand up against corruption, to stand up against a cabal of powerful people who want to destroy you because you're threatening to take away what belongs to them.
I think education.
But you got to have the, you know, you've got to find the integrity to do what you can personally to stand up to it. And that's where all of us that are on this call right now share. Elliot sent me something and said, can you please read this for me? He says, I love Leslie and Phil and their efforts to educate citizens of their civil rights to better protect pro-se citizens caught up in this Nazi horror story in America. However, I think until law enforcement does their jobs and criminally investigates and prosecutes these black robe crimes and hang a few on courthouse steps, we're dead in the water. Please educate yourselves in criminal law as well as civil law.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm offering Leslie and Phil to help educate citizens on how to file criminal complaints and how to organize to put pressure on criminal authorities. Love, love, thanks. And I got to say, I absolutely agree.
Go ahead. Is that Marcy?
I wanted to say that to go hand in hand in what you just said, I just got a text. If I would make this announcement, if you know of a judge who may have committed misconduct, please send us details at shift@thompsonreuters.com. Include the name of the judge, the state, details of what the judge may have done wrong, and a way for us to contact you. Reuters, which is spelled R-E-U-T-E-R-S, investigate such tips and will contact you before publishing. So,
oh, good.
The email,
I can also
is
post I'll go ahead and post that on Facebook, Marcia. Go ahead and paste that on Facebook.
Yeah, ThompsonReuters.com. Okay.
Our radio show has definitely lit up. I mean, we've got
a lot of people waiting, so let's take some more calls.
Yeah, we've got like 5 or 6 calls, maybe 7 now. The number to do that is 845-241-9962. You press A1. Let's bring in an 845 number area code. You're live on Faces Radio.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Hey.
Hi.
I call kind of often, I guess. But I'm liking what I'm hearing tonight. I love what Leslie and I'm sorry, the gentleman is Mr. Ross.
Yes.
What you're doing, very commendable, courageous, admirable, all of that. And, of course, you know, information and knowledge, that's very powerful. However, I have to mostly agree with, firstly, Robin, because I think you first brought up the corruption topic, but also with Elliot. I mean, I started to laugh when he said he was referring to the Godfather, and I'm thinking, and I've said this before, and I think even on this show, because I've heard it, and I think it's so appropriate and accurate, that this cabal makes the mafia look like Cub Scouts. I mean, it's outrageous. There's a quote, and maybe many of you have heard it, there is no greater tyranny than that which is perpetrated under the shield of law and in the name of justice. Montesquieu, something like that.
Montesquieu.
What I wanted to say is just I want to reiterate and validate in some way what Robin and Elliot were saying, that no matter what we do, I mean, attorneys, respectfully, you couldn't even protect yourselves from these people. These aliens, I call them, because they're so callous and so inhumane, and just it's going to take a lot more than trying to fight within their box, within their system. We need to have hearings. We need to have oversight, and it will start with exposure. And I would respectfully request, there is an organization, and I'm sure you've heard of it, many of you, and Robin and Luann, I believe that you were on the board or, you know, trustees or whatever. I don't know what you're calling yourselves, spokespeople for America United International. It was organized by the late Dr. Zena Crenshaw Logel, who is now deceased. And It seems like the organization, it was really not an organization, but a campaign. I would respectfully ask the two attorneys that are on tonight to perhaps think about instigating that campaign, which is online at AmericaUnitedInternational.org. I think it's .org. I'm not really sure. I haven't been on the website for quite a while. But, you know, the wheel does not have to be reinvented is what I'm trying to say. We need to, again, step outside of that system that they have us lulled into, this false sense of security, that if we could just do it right, if we could just be prepared and know what our rights are, if we could just have the evidence, we have all of that. We need to have checks and balances over this third branch of government. We need to expose
right.
them. And that's where we need to invest our time and energy. I mean, I'm sorry I talk so loud. I'm very, very traumatized, extremely traumatized
right.
by what they have done to me for nearly two decades. I think, Elia, I think you have me beat by a few years. I can't even believe it. I mean, it is
right.
nothing but a terroristic organization at this point, in my opinion.
Right.
But the
okay.
judges need to be found out, exposed, and they need to be checked and balanced, just like the president, the former president, he's being checked and balanced. If a legislator gets out of line, he or she gets checked and balanced, and we need to do that for the judges. Yes, we have these, you know, separate and distinct branches of government, but we must have checks and balances, and we need to demand it by exposing them. I respectfully request once again,
hey, Elizabeth,
the two attorneys to try to invest the time that way and get us all
right.
united in that effort. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Elliot is texting me. And he said, can you have her call me?
Well,
so
Elizabeth, anyway.
If you would like to get in touch with Elliot Bernstein, he would love to chat with you.
I can get him in touch with that. I also wanted to mention something earlier. Leslie, I'm sure you're aware of America United International. Linda Parker got a hold of you not too long ago.
Yes.
And I do think, I think that you're going to be helping out with that as well.
Yes. I have it on my calendar. She wants me to come to, I guess, the next meeting. And introduce
mm-hmm.
myself, and she did send me some information on a case, and I'm just waiting to hear back from her. I had some questions on it, you know, just to kind of review and give my insight and my thoughts on it, you know. So yes, I've definitely been in touch with her.
Okay, and I think you should also mention Phil on the call as well, because we belong to America United International. We're on the we're on the board there, so we'll be listening to that as well. But thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. We're going to move on to another 770 number. We've got about six more calls. 770, question, call.
Hi, this is Becky. Hi, this is Becky.
Hi.
I have a question for Phil. I have a question for Phil. The Charlie Thrash case has always interested me. I've gone over that case repeatedly. I try to, you know, listen to everything the wife says, and it's, you know, in other words, it's of high interest to me because my husband was taken in a guardianship. My question to you is, when you mentioned that Mr. Thrash was taken with no evidentiary hearing, and, you know, that's, of course, you know, you can't do that. I wanted to know, when that happened, how did you intervene, if you did any intervention at all?
I was not involved at that point. That was in November of 2018 when the final hearing to appoint permanent guardians occurred in Bexar County, Texas. I did not know anything about the Thrash guardianship at that point. I found out about it when Laura and Charlie Thrash called me a couple of months later, trying to interest me in helping Charlie get out of the guardianship they determined was not necessary and was improper. And at that time, there was a pending motion for new trial, But the first day that I was in court seeking to represent Charlie Thrash, the judge prevented me from being involved in that hearing on the motion for new trial, because he told me that the court had already deemed that Charlie lacked capacity to retain me as his attorney, even though I argued that a ward, even if they don't have capacity, have the right under the Texas Estates Code to hire an attorney to help them get out of the guardianship. And but the judge was a brand new judge. He acted very arrogantly and was prone to lecture me and anybody else that disagreed with him rather than have a fair hearing. And I determined from that point that I was going to do everything I could to help Charlie Thrash get out of the guardianship. But every initiative that I took was countered by a team of five or six lawyers that were working for the guardians. And
right.
in that arena, with a judge that was catering to the guardians' attorneys, it was not possible for me to be effective. And
I see.
I determined that in order to help Charlie, it was going to be a more long-term effort that had to include a political angle. And I welcomed the inquiry from the producers that put together the documentary about Charlie's case, because hopefully in the long term, it may help him if he survives to get out of the guardianship and to bring
right.
the judge and the guardians and their attorneys to justice. But the only hope of widespread publicity is the defamation case and how that evolves and spreads the truth about the unfortunate experience that Charlie and his family have suffered under for many years since 2018.
Right. It's just a tragic case. Well, I will say one more thing. You'd just be shocked. Well, I don't know if you'd really be shocked, but so many of these cases, they're put under a guardianship exactly as you and Leslie describe, and there is no evidentiary hearing. And really, if you, in my case, it was all my attorneys, and I had five different attorneys, and not one of them offered an evidentiary hearing. And, finally, in the very end, when the evidentiary hearing was held, it's in probate court with a probate lawyer. You're charged with a crime, literally a felony in probate court, and it's just a joke. You've got a probate lawyer trying to defend a felony. It's just a nightmare. But I think that you and Leslie have the right idea. Is prevention is everything. If you know, like if I would have just known how important that evidentiary hearing was, I knew, but not really in legal terms. I knew I wasn't being given my rights. I just didn't know how to fight back with my own lawyers. To end this, that's what I would say is we've all got to be aware of the attorneys that we're hiring to defend us, because the first thing that I notice they do is call the other side, buddy up with them, keep that trial going where they both get lots of money very quick. And that's why you better know your law. I think you both have the right idea, and thank you very much for all your effort.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, excellent. Becky, can't wait to hear what you have to say to put in our book as well.
I know, and I promise that's coming. Thank you so much. Good night, everyone.
Okay, good night. Oh, my gosh, she's such a wonderful lady. 254 area code. You're on the air live. We've got like five more people on here. 254.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
254, you're on the air. Looks like
hello,
we're going to the next person.
Okay,
hello?
Hi. Come
yes,
on
that's
on.
You. Welcome to the show.
Hi, my name is Jill Perryman. I'm from the Waco area, and my mom has passed away in October of last year, and I was trying to get guardianship of her, and now we're going into probate, and we have a hearing March the 12th. And I'm trying to get my brother, who was the executor on the will, knocked down, and I have four siblings, and I'm the only one trying to go for administrator. Do y'all have any kind of advice for me?
Let's go with Leslie. How about having her come to your pro se class?
You know, I'm hesitant about. I'm very with understanding, because I've said this before. One fact could change the entire, you know, dynamic of a case. So. Mm-hmm. I would need to, like, for me to give an opinion on anything, you know what I mean, with what you just said, I'm the type of person, I need to read a docket entirely. I need to read everything,
sure.
You know what I mean? So I don't know if Phil has an opinion on it, but for me, I would be hesitant to, because I could say something and there
sure.
might be something I don't know, and it could steer you down the wrong path. So I deserve to give any opinion of that. But I don't know if Phil does it or not. So,
well, I have like five attorneys, and I have one that's only going to be at the hearing. But I've spent $60,000 and got nowhere. My brother did an instant burial with my mom. I wasn't there on her deathbed for about 2 years. Only seen her a handful of times. And he told me, he said, you'll never see your mom again, and she'll die in assisted living, where they went together and put her in memory care. And I have seven kids, and so me and my seven kids couldn't see her, and even no one else, just my two brothers and my baby sister could see her. But even people mm-hmm. from church that was friends with her would go up there, and they would turn everybody away.
Wow. That's kind of sad.
Well, I'll tell you,
Elliot
Bernstein texted me on this and said, have the current caller, that would be you, file a criminal complaint if she thinks crimes are being committed. He said, have mm-hmm. her call me, discuss criminal aspects if interested.
Right. So I can get everybody, if you want to get a hold of any of these individuals calling in, hit me up an email at faceusradio@hotmail.com. And we can hook you up with whoever you want onto our show, as long as we have their permission. And also, Leslie has a class we're going to talk about here pretty soon about how she could help you with that. So, I'm thinking that, why not? I mean, I'd be going there first. And it's donation-based, which is really good. Let's go ahead and bring in another caller. We've got three or four more callers. And we're going to talk a little bit more how you can get onto this pro se workshop, okay? So thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. Okay, 616. Mm-hmm. 616.
Hello, this
area
is
code.
Brandy.
Hi, Brandy.
Hi. I am in the midst of preparing a major lawsuit against the nursing home myself. And I have a question for Leslie. What is the difference between the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR, that establishes patient rights, and why those rights are not enforced and being held against us family members? So what makes those rules not followed, not upheld, and wondered what the difference is between CFR and actual law?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, you've got, when you're dealing in, say, a federal court, you're going to have a different set of rules than you're going to have if you're dealing in a state court. These types of proceedings, guardianship and probate, these are state court proceedings. You don't apply the federal rules unless you're in federal court.
Right.
And
but
to get,
when
you know, to get
in a nursing home, they have the resident rights. That is part of the CFR. So every nursing home in America gives these out. So that's why I don't understand how it's not enforced.
Well, I mean, I'm not like. Are you talking about as far as like in your in a, like a legal suit or?
It's for all of the above.
For
so
somebody that's
it's
living there.
The Code of Federal Regulations that outlines patient rights, which is CFR 483.10, section F is in Frank, 4.II. So that is what defines like people being banned and saying they can't see their loved ones. It's all illegal.
You would have to, I mean, if somebody is not, in, you know, not a, if rules aren't being enforced that are supposed to be followed, you know, that's why we have lawsuits, right? and complaints,
right.
Because, you know, an agency or an organization isn't following what they're supposed to do. It's not that, you know, like, how do I say it? Sometimes you have to bring it to their attention. Sometimes it can be done in a formal letter pointing out, you know, how they're not following certain, you know, rules that they're mandated to follow. And if things
which
don't change, you know, when people file lawsuits. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Then people file lawsuits and you argue, you know, that these rules were supposed to be followed and they're not being followed and damage has been done. I mean, that's why people file lawsuits, because something, you know, is not being done that should, and it's impeding on your rights. But, I mean, as far as everybody being perfect in this world, they don't, unfortunately. You know, there's plenty of organizations that don't follow the rules they're supposed to.
But do you incorporate those rules into a lawsuit? Like, why do they have rules if they're not law? Like, that, I guess, what's the difference between the rule and
well,
the law?
Well, there's
the
rules.
Eyes?
I mean, you've got like, okay, so you got stats. You have different types of binding authority. You have statutes that are, you know, a state comes up with that are, you know, statutory criteria of, you know, different, say, elements of a claim, or you have different statutes. Then you have state government has the power to give birth to state agencies, right? And state agencies have what's called rulemaking power. So they might not be statutes, they're rules, but they're still binding. It's a different form of authority. So, you know, a rule is binding just like a statute would be binding. It's just a different type of authority that an agency, you know, has the power to create.
Interesting. All right. Thank you so much.
I don't know if you'll
love
to expand on that, but, yeah.
Okay. We are going to move on. Thanks, Brandy, for calling in. Let's go ahead and bring a 437 area code. We got quite a lot of different area codes tonight. Boy, we've got them from 437, 717, 616, 254, 770, 845, 561. Boy, my God, 239. Look at all these in here.
Mm-hmm.
410, 914. That's excellent. I'm glad it's getting around. 437, you're on the air with us. Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's
Hi.
Mo from Toronto, Ontario, and I have a question for the lawyers. I wanted to find out, when you go to court, who's responsible for preparing the judgment, the decision? Is it a lawyer or is it the judge?
Well, in my experience, normally the judge requests the lawyers to prepare a proposed order or a proposed judgment.
Generally
required in Texas that when you file a motion to get an order, or whether when you have a trial to get a judgment, that the lawyers involved for each side file proposed orders with the judge, and then the judge reviews the orders and decides which one he agrees with and signs it.
Yes, yes. I actually had called the Court of Appeal in Ontario where I live, and I asked the lady, and she had told me it was the judge that files, that makes the decision based on what happens at the hearing. Because in my case, my lawyers never prepared any decisions or judgments beforehand. So the judgment that I had literally written up by the lawyer that staged the funeral scam to defraud me and my mother. So I just thought this would be a good time for me to actually call in and ask the question, because the Court of Appeal where I live had said it should be the judge. And I've asked a paralegal, I've asked more people, they've all said that the judgment's made by the judge. And I know when I've reviewed the rules of civil procedure, there was never any mention of a lawyer preparing or drafting any judgment. So I kind of wanted to get a feel to kind of point me in that direction so I could have a plan to deal with what happened to my mother's estate. The other question I wanted to ask is, what are you thinking about Wendy Williams' guardianship? Because I think it was an ex parte hearing. You know, do you have any thoughts about what's going on with Wendy Williams?
Right. Leslie fell off to the radio show. She might have been kicked off. I don't know. The phone lines are very full right now. I know that Wendy Williams, I think they're doing some kind of documentary with that right now, I think what's going on.
Yes. I'm
not familiar with that proceeding. I do not have any information.
Okay. It was an ex parte hearing, so she had no idea what was happening. But anyway, I'd like to say thank you very much for being a voice for the elderly, and good luck, Phil, in, you know, fighting to keep dirty money, you know, for everybody to see it. I did see it. I was very fortunate to see it, and it was really worthwhile. Very well done, and it must be exposed, and it should be something that everybody in North America should see, because it's an eye-opener.
There you go.
Good luck, and I'm hoping that justice for you and for Laura and for Charlie and for all the other affected people. So thank you very much. This is all I needed to say. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Well, that was very nice of her to call in and say that. Leslie must have fallen off. I do believe that our phone lines are full. So, Leslie, if you do want to call back in, that's okay.
Please do, and we'll try to get you back on.
And we'll try to get
raise your hand as soon as you get back on.
717. Let's bring on a 717 number. It's actually been really busy tonight. 717, you have a question, comment?
Yeah, hi. 71. My name is Lucas McNair. Hello?
Hi, Lucas.
Hi, Lucas.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. My name is Lucas McNair. I want to start off by thanking you for all your support. I want to thank Leslie, who I spoke with 2 days ago, and I'm going to speak with her tomorrow, for helping with my case. She's going through it. I encourage other people to, call her. She's helping, and I encourage them to donate. I want to say that anyone has permission to reach out to me, Lucas McNair out of Lafayette, Indiana. You can search my case under courts.in.gov, and you can email me at lucasmcnair@icloud.com. I just wanted to say that I heard what Elliot said earlier about how frustrating it is, because it's sort of like the Biden administration proposing new laws to fix the border, but they have to enforce the current laws. That's what the problem is. And I agree with what he's saying, and I feel everything that he's saying. I just want to stress like how important it is for people like Leslie and Phil to do what they do, because we don't want to diminish what they do, because they help people like me who are banging their head like a pinball going around through this maze and hitting, close, mm-hmm. The doors are always closed. And so it's a long fight, and I was able to get my rights restored, and now I'm still sort of pursuing justice and trying to figure out what happened to my trust, and, you know, whole bank accounts were stolen. So I have a clear case of fiduciary breach, and it's a lot to look through, and I appreciate Leslie, and I just sort of wanted to mention that. And there was another caller who said she's paid $60,000 so far, and I feel that, you know. I'm out here, you know, because I'm on my seventh lawyer, and in between lawyers I would say, man, this isn't right. Like, the first two or three were, like, straight out lying, you know, and I was like, this isn't right. I'm going to try to do it on my own, you know, and it's just so discouraging, because where I'm at right now, it feels like the judge, you get it when the judge sort of doesn't acknowledge you, but when he doesn't acknowledge your lawyer, and something that to me seems very obvious, if you look through my docket, there was no accounting, no real accounting for the whole 20-year span of the guardianship. So I'm sorry, I'll just stop talking. I guess if anybody has any comments, that's great, but I just wanted to thank everyone and encourage you to reach out to Leslie and donate. And, you know, I just have to say she's helped me tremendously so far. I look forward to talking to her tomorrow in the morning.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. And Phil, yeah, you're going to be working with her as well. So, and that's at
www.familylawprose.com. That's spelled the same as the word prose, like poetry and prose. Family Law Pro Se, P-R-O-S, familylawprose.com.
Right. I have it on my computer, but it's so dark I couldn't read it.
And
that's
where
donation,
you find her website.
Donation-based.
It is donation-based, and that means that you're not going to have to come up with money to get some kind of assistance. If you just don't have it, don't let that stop you. Now, if you've got some money, you know, support what they're doing, because this is a tremendous benefit to anyone that takes advantage of the opportunity to work with these lawyers, with Leslie and it looks like Bill is coming on board with her in some capacity. So I want to say I very much appreciate what that caller had to say. You know, I see with clear eyes. I've been battling court corruption for so many years, and I know when Elliot says it's not going to do any good, you can't do any good, and till the sheriffs arrest judges, and, you know, there's a lot of truth to what he's saying, that we have a corrupt system and that we do have to go after these perpetrators at the highest levels, and that these law enforcement professionals that should be enforcing these criminal laws against these criminals who are wearing black robes, and so they hide behind them. Really, that's what should be happening. But it does not reduce the value of the work that that Leslie Federico's and Bill Ross and the people like them and of their ilk that are doing, what they are doing to assist people. As here's an example, someone who used what he was learning and used the advantages given that were made available to him to get himself out of guardianship. And of course, you know, they robbed him in the process. Of course, they took a lot of bank accounts. Of course, you know, there's many things wrong, but there's something really right with the fact that sometimes you get these victories that can be unanticipated and unexpected and very much changing the lives of the person for whom that, perhaps it's a smaller victory than it ought to be. Perhaps it's, you know, and maybe it's not a victory of the war, but if you win a little battle here and there,
yeah,
because you've educated yourself about the law, and if you've got help,
I sure
because,
wish I had it.
Because this school exists online that allows you to go there and learn what you need to learn, man, that's worth it to me. That's making a huge, huge difference. And it's very important, I think, to acknowledge that and value that for its real, true worth.
Right.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to speak with anybody as someone who's done it. Sort of, I didn't do it alone. I had a lot of help from Rick Black and his team, but I was able to do it. And Rick said to me, he said, "You're my unicorn," you know. And I almost went to the Supreme Court to speak with, I think it was Casey, I forget his name, but I interviewed with them. And if anybody wants to reach out to me and sort of talk about, like, what I went through, and if you want to talk to somebody who was able to do it, I can help, and I can help you a little, you know, maybe not so much with the lawyer stuff, but a lot of it is just having the ambition and the drive to do it. And if you want to talk to somebody who did it, I did it, you can email me, lucasmcnair@icloud.org. And I'm still here. I'm still fighting. But yeah, it's possible. And, you know, you can't do it alone. I know that, but it's important to try.
Yeah, and I think down the road we'll try to have you on as a guest so you can talk to everybody how you got out of it. I think it's so important to really think about the work that Leslie's doing and Phil. I mean, I would have given anything to be able to talk to a lawyer anywhere, attorney, lawyer. When I was going on with my case, I had to fill out the paperwork myself. I never did it. And I tell you what, I don't even know if I would have even filed for guardianship for my mom, because it really didn't do any good that I know of. I mean, I'm still pondering that. But, Phil, so go ahead and tell us a little bit what you're hoping to see happens here. I mean, you're working with Leslie now, and I'm sure there's other attorneys that might even join you there that were also sanctioned. I know quite a few. Give us an update what you plan on doing. I know Leslie's not on with this anymore. She had to go and take care of her kids. So go ahead and talk for us.
Well, a lot of people that are not educated in the law, like lawyers have to be in order to pass an exam and get licensed, don't understand either the advantages or disadvantages of representing yourself. There's certain particular advantages to being your own attorney. And one of the things that a lot of people maybe don't appreciate very fully is that the right to be your own attorney is an extremely valuable right. And in order to be an effective attorney, you need to educate yourself about the law. But being your own attorney can save you, if you're effective, a lot of money. Because, like in a couple of cases that I'm working on for myself as my own attorney, I'm saving hundreds of dollars per hour for the time that I spend working on my own case. And when you're suing an insurance company, or you're suing a city or a big contractor or the state of Texas, like I am in a few different cases, you can't really stay in the case effectively for many years if you're carrying the overhead of paying an attorney by the hour as you go. In my experience, some of the cases, like the ones I'm involved in presently and cases that I've worked on before, take years to get resolved and end up costing hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees. And by being my own attorney, I can give myself credit for enough time and enough work and enough billable hours to be able to compete with law firms that are getting paid by the hour by their clients. I can remember back in one of the early cases that I had, fighting with the city of San Antonio over couple of condemnation cases, I generated over a period of about 3 or 4 years that it took to resolve those cases over 1,000 hours of billable time in each case. And ultimately, because I was able to win the case and get the claims against my property dismissed, I was able to save hundreds of thousands of dollars. And because I was a licensed attorney, I was able to recover my attorney's fees. If I hadn't been a licensed attorney at that time, I would have had to settle for just saving the money. But because I was licensed, I was able to actually get reimbursed for the professional time that I spent on those cases. But being able to handle and control the finances of your case is a big advantage if you're dealing with a difficult case where you're running into a lot of opposition. Another advantage is that when you're presenting evidence at a hearing or a trial, if you're representing yourself, you can often testify narrative rather than by question and answer. And this is something that I have done in the past, and it can be very effective because it allows you an opportunity to organize your testimony and to be able to present it in a very effective manner. And this is a big advantage because attorneys are not allowed to be witnesses in cases where they are representing a client and providing argument to the court. And that is because the courts and the legislature have decided that it's too confusing for a jury to have the same person giving evidence and also arguing the case to the court. But as a pro se litigant, you get to present your own evidence, and you also get to argue your own case. So if you know what you're doing and you put enough time and effort into your case, you have a big advantage over somebody that's represented by an attorney, because different people have to put in the testimony and the attorney gets to argue, but the attorney is not allowed to be their own witness and also their own attorney. I'm not sure if that's real clear, but to me, that's a big advantage. And then there's also extreme disadvantages, but we can get into those later.
Okay, go ahead, Robin.
Let me ask a question, Phil. One of my listeners is wondering, and it makes me wonder, why do pro se litigants not charge their legal fees and costs? Could they do that? I mean, is there what is the answer to that question? Why are pro se litigants not charging legal fees and costs when they go to court?
Well, even an attorney who's representing himself normally does not get to be reimbursed for his attorney's fees. But in order to charge a legal fee, you have to be licensed to practice law. Currently, I am not licensed to practice law, and I choose not to be. But I have to settle with the satisfaction of not having to pay a lawyer when I feel like I can do as good or better job myself. Conventional wisdom is that a lawyer that represents himself has a fool for a client. But I think there's a flip side to that, that sometimes, and I think, you know, in my cases, being my own lawyer is smart, not foolish. But I still have to prove that point by results. But I have a lot of experience currently representing myself on a variety of cases. And Leslie also has experience representing herself. And even though we are not licensed to practice law, we cannot advise people, we cannot counsel people, even if we do it for free or for donation, without risking having our adversaries try to get us charged with unlicensed practice of law, which in Florida is a felony, but in Texas on the first offense is a misdemeanor and the second offense is a felony. So neither Leslie nor I have any intention of practicing law. But we do have experience and motivation to represent ourselves, which is our right, and share that experience and knowledge with other people, which we have a First Amendment right to do. We can't give advice or we can't counsel people, but we can share information. We can educate people and help them figure out where the answers are. Help them think like a lawyer and find the answers with or without help from lawyers or law instructors or professors or other sources of information.
Right.
One interesting insight is that as a beginning lawyer, when I was representing myself on cases that I did not learn in law school, I was able to educate myself by the people that I was opposing. I learned a lot from opposing counsel, and I learned a lot by going to court records and seeing what other lawyers had filed in similar cases. And you can find motions and pleadings and answers and responses in other cases, and then you can copy that those pleadings and adapt them to your case. And that's something that beginning lawyers that don't have anybody who's mentoring them have to learn to do. You copy what other people have already done, and you do your own legwork to find documents that make sense to you and seem to be well-written and well thought out. And then you apply those, apply the form of those and sometimes the substance to your own case. So there's a lot that individuals can learn just by going to the clerk's office and looking up similar cases. Last week, somebody asked me how to draft a motion to change venue in a guardianship case. My response is all you have to do is go down to the clerk's office and look up another case where somebody filed a motion to transfer venue and then copy that motion and just act like or treat it like a form that somebody else has developed and adapt it to your situation. I cannot give somebody the form and advise them how to fill it out without risking potential prosecution for illegal practice of law. But I think it's more effective for me to help educate people online, which can have a lot bigger effect on my ultimate goal of helping to educate Americans to be able to avoid being victims, prepare for potential problems, and if you get into a situation, being able to protect yourself and having the tools to do a good job.
Yeah. Boy, I tell you, I can listen to you all day, Phil and Leslie. I got the biggest kick out of you. I mean,
I've got another question from a listener. What about a proposed order? Could a pro se litigant get remedy in monetary funds? And, is there any way that, I guess people give their life, their ability, their time, their energy and hard cash to fight pro se. Mm-hmm. Would it be possible to put in a proposal and try to get a ruling that would allow you to be compensated in some way? I mean, is this out of the question? What's the answer to that? Is it, people are kind of digesting that. What do you have to say?
Well, I've been thinking about that on the defamation case that I'm involved in with Netflix and other people. Some of the people in that case are not represented because they are former clients of mine that I had to withdraw from representing them last March, and they have not hired new representation. But some of the parties to the Netflix case have pending motions to dismiss the defamation claims against them. And Texas law it mandates that the judge who dismisses a defamation case under the so-called anti-SLAPP statute, it's a 15-year-old statute in Texas that protects people's right to free speech and authorizes the court to dismiss a groundless or frivolous defamation case. Now, the law mandates that when a defamation case is dismissed under the anti-SLAPP statute, that the court has to award attorney's fees. But the court also has discretion to award sanctions. And my thought is that a self-represented person who succeeds in getting a defamation case dismissed under the anti-SLAPP statute can ask the court for sanctions in lieu of attorney's fees. And I think that would be something easy for the judge to decide, that if this person deserves to have the case dismissed and they're not licensed to practice law so that they can't collect attorney's fees, that they ought to be able to be awarded sanctions in lieu of attorney's fees. And I'm sure there's other statutes that would work that way. It's just being able to think about that kind of a solution and be able to argue it to the court and show legal precedent, if you can find it, to make it easy for the judge to do the right thing and difficult for them to do the wrong thing.
Well, thank you for that. Do appreciate that. That's awesome. I can listen to you all day. Our time is up here at Faces Radio.
It
left us exactly 2 minutes ago, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a little bit over time as well. We want to thank Leslie Rodriguez for coming on. Thank you, Phil, as always. Now you can go to Leslie's. I know you'll be helping her there at www.familylawprose.com.
FamilyLawProse, P-R-O-S-E. Prose, the word prose comes out to be the same as Pro Se.
Right.
FamilyLawProse.com.
The donations, you can get some help there. And we'll be happy to see what happens in the future here. Phil, I'm sure we'll be having you back on again as well. And just keep us updated with everything, if you will. Remember, justice requires transparency and accountability, and giving up
is not
an
option.
Good night, everybody. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Hillary.
Thank you to all our listeners.
Thank you for
coming on.
Good night.
Thank you,
Hillary.
Our
and I can't wait to hear some more from you about what's going on, and I'll talk later with you.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay?
Without a doubt. Good night, everyone.
Remember, all of our shows are recorded and archived at blogtalkradio.com/hiddentruthrevealed. If you want to re-listen to this show, you can find it there. And there's hundreds of other shows that you can also get into.
Exactly. We're going to go ahead and just sign off. I guess that's the best thing we can do. Good night, everybody.